time for Hanson McLean Advisors Money Matters, hosted by Scott Hanson and Pat McLean, credentialed financial advisors serving you since 1993.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean. Thanks for joining us this weekend. What an absolutely beautiful weekend.
That's right. And it is, I got to tell you, as I'm reading, the news is coming on before we're on here, and the study that said on Spring Forward Week, and this is Spring Forward Week, and we got to set the clocks forward. And I was just thinking this morning, a couple weeks, I woke up without my alarm clock. I'm enjoying it now. I've got to readjust. But they said this coming week, 25% of all heart attacks, according to this one particular study, happened on Monday, this Monday. So
not 25% of all heart attacks. It's 25% more likely.
Is that what the study was?
Yeah,
whatever
yeah.
the number. We just gave the study. But the point is, there's more heart attacks on this particular Monday than other days.
Why?
They had some excuses. But
I ask, why did we study that? That's what I want to know.
I think we should take off Monday, was my point. So, you have permission from us to have your Monday off.
I just wonder, why did we study that? Are we going to change it?
A federal grant probably went to the university to study that, my guess. Your tax dollars at work. Anyway, we both myself and my co-host, we're both financial advisors, certified financial planner, charter financial consultant, and we spend our time during the week with people like yourself. We come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air, and we talk about everything in the world of finance.
Yes.
That is why, I mean, we are financial advisors, not
we
just
talk about
investment
mortgages. We talk about 401ks. We talk about IRAs. We talk about Roth IRAs.
Estate planning. How do you deal with all these family issues and your money and all those
questions about life insurance or disability insurance or long-term care? It's a second opinion right here. You call in. You can be anonymous, and we will do our best to help you.
Change your name to whatever you want.
Yes.
We really don't care. Just keep the facts somewhat straight. Anyway, if you want to be part of the program, our contact number here is 916-921-1530. Again, question about your retirement or your kid's college savings or what do you do now that your kid doesn't want to go to college and you have the money saved?
Yeah.
Again, 921-1530 to join the program. Toll-free lines 1-800-834-1530. As a reminder, it's always easier to get on early in the program. For the lines are all booked, 921-1530.
Or you could email us a question at questions@moneymatters.com.
Yeah, and speaking of Money Matters, if you haven't been to our website lately, moneymatters.com, we've done a big revamp of it. I think you'll like it a great deal.
When we say we mean the people that work at Hanson McLean.
I just looked this morning and I saw it was up. Oh, okay, look at that. It's looking kind of cool.
Lots of content?
Yeah. Good stuff there. So
we're proud
and
of
it's
it.
Going to keep getting better as the weeks go on. So
we're working on it. We have a crack team of marketing and content strategists working on this.
Strategist. Yeah. Anyway, it was an interesting week with the markets. Friday we saw a little bit of a pullback on the markets, and they made some excuse to why that was, but it doesn't really matter because
I'm tired of hearing the unemployment numbers.
I think it's a joke. Give me a break.
Some point in time, I want someone to talk about the participation rate. The only time I've ever actually heard anyone on the radio talk about the participation rate was Tom Sullivan on his show. And I thought, good for you, Tom Sullivan. He gets it.
Because that's exciting numbers, radio. Employment participation rate.
That's what I think. Well, let's talk a little bit about the participation rate.
We've
just
talked
a little.
We just talked about it a week or two ago. Okay. The fact is, here's the deal. Right, you're probably tuning into the program because you want to make wise choices with your money. In order for your money to grow, we will need a growing economy.
That's just the facts.
That's the fact, right? And the GDP growth is going to come primarily from two factors. Factor number one, increase productivity. So the more that we can generate per worker, clearly technology is a big help there, the more we can increase productivity. We've had tremendous productivity gains over the last 100 years in this country, and that's a great reason why we've had great growth in our GDP. Second is an increasing employment, more workers. You really need those two things.
And you want some wage growth.
Well, you're going to get that with those other two factors.
We hope.
But if there's no economy that's going to grow without some sort of increasing labor force. Look at Japan. That's been Japan's problem. There's no immigrants to Japan. That's their real problem. So when we look at the unemployment rate, that's all fine and dandy. But if our participation rate, there's less people working.
And what participation rate means is what percentage of the population that is of working age is actually working. That's what participation rate means.
What are we at? 5.5% was the last
That's
number.
That's what
I
they
saw.
Said.
If that 5.5% all said, you know what, we're not going to look for work anymore,
then the unemployment numbers would be zero.
Zero.
Or if that 5.5% got on some sort of other aid, Social Security disability, Social Security, some sort of federal aid or state aid, and they dropped from the workforce, your unemployment numbers would get better. Does it mean that they couldn't work? It doesn't have anything to do with whether they could or couldn't work. It's whether they want to or need to work or not. And that's why the participation rate matters.
And for the life of me, I can't understand
You can why. Understand it.
Why it's not mentioned more?
Yes.
I don't really understand it. Here's what I understand. The government's used to spewing out certain statistics. And a lot of people in the media, quite frankly, in the financial world, they just take whatever's thrown their way and make news out of it.
Yes.
That's what, I mean, so yes, I
guess
I understand.
Sound
anyway, 921-1530. You can hear us sit and ramble about this.
921-1530. 1-800-834-1530.
Let's start off here with Jeff. Jeff, you're with Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Good morning. How you doing?
Awesome, Jeff.
Good. Hey, my question is, my dad passed away at the end of 2013, and before he passed away, he had done the whole thing, laid out a trust, everything looked like it was all set up, but he had also done a refi. When he did a refi, he took the property out of the trust, which I understand was at the direction of the whole process. And it didn't get put back in.
Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I went through the probate thing, and they said, okay, it's set. You're okay to be the executor or the property owner. You know, so everything looks like it's all set. But the mortgage company said, well, we need the insurance company now to go back and put his name back on the insurance, because the insurance is under my name now. And the insurance said, well, we can't do that because he's deceased.
Yeah, he's deceased.
You're talking about the property and casualty insurance or the title insurance?
I believe this would be the
fire insurance. Is that what you're talking about?
Well, I believe it was the property insurance.
I don't understand why so it's the property insurance in case there's either an injury on the property to pay out or a claim or a fire. I don't understand. So are you taking over the mortgage, or did you refinance this house?
Let me step back a little further.
I'm going to take it over, yeah.
Okay. Right. Is this in the process of probate, or is that completed through probate?
That's completed.
Okay. Did he not have a pour-over instruction in his trust that says any assets that's not in the trust, throw it back into the trust?
Yeah, but the house is in his name now. Right, Jeff, the house is now in your name, correct?
That's according to the judge, I have the full reign to do whatever I want with it now.
Got it. You need to retitle the property in your name.
But there's a mortgage on the property, right?
Yes, exactly.
And the mortgage company wants to get paid.
Right.
Have you talked to them?
I talked to them and I said, "Hey, what do I do to transfer this over to my name?" And they said, you know, because it was with my dad, you know, I was hoping it to be just inherited down. And they said, well, since it was under his name, you're going to have to refinance
it.
Yeah,
there we go. Yeah, that's okay. That's it. Okay.
Okay. Now, if I do that, does that mean that it's different than as if it were gifted to me if I go through the whole refi process?
No. You have the house.
We didn't have the house yet because there's a lien on it. And then the mortgage company is not going to release the house until the lien's paid. So if you can qualify for a mortgage, they will release the house and it can be transferred from your father's estate to you at that time. But the mortgage company is not going to want to do anything. That's where your hang up is right now.
So tell me what the value of the home is.
It's about 260,000.
And what did your father owe on it?
About 170.
And tell me about yourself. Have you ever taken a mortgage out before?
No, we haven't, because we actually built our house on this same piece of property before he had passed. There was no second mortgage. It was just refi, and it's all under the main mortgage.
And how? And what's your income?
Our income is about 110.
Oh, you should easily be able to qualify for a loan.
Yeah. Okay.
The challenge is the mortgage company will not release the house as long as there's that lien on it, because it's your dad's estate needs to pay that. So. The mortgage company would just assume you refinance it, because they don't want to have to foreclose on this property, obviously, or go after the estate, right? So they would like to see you refinance it, but it's going to be in your father's name until that time. And
I don't understand where the insurance company comes in. I wouldn't worry about the insurance company. If the premium's paid, what you need to do is transfer the title into your name and refinance this mortgage into your own name, and you're good.
And then they'll transfer it, and then it'll be a simple process. So hope that helps some, Jeff. And okay. We need up against the clock here. So anyway,
that does. Thank you very much.
Good. Have a great week, and really glad you called. And this is the kind of thing that we deal with, all things financial, not just talking about what the best mutual fund to buy is or whatnot. We're taking a quick break. 916-921-1530. There's still three lines open. 921-1530. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean.
Hey, before we go back to the calls here, we've seen oil prices continue to stay low, right? $50 a barrel or whatever. Have you been to the gas? I mean, I pump gas on the way to the...
It seems the price has gone up.
It's like the oil prices are back at 80 or something.
Yeah.
They were almost at $2 a gallon, and now they're back to $3.50.
Yeah.
And the oil is not the culprit.
No. I was at a gas station, and I thought... Is this me?
You forgot to change the price here.
Is this me?
And I tell you, a lot of it is because of the regulations in California on the super clean gas that we need here. And there was a fire at some refinery that showed the supply and demand.
Switch over when they...
Summertime stuff.
Yeah.
And as I was complaining to myself this morning, thinking, darn it, these California regulations, I was reminded that when I grew up in Los Angeles,
it was smoggy.
I could hardly, fortunately, I lived near the ocean, so we had the breeze coming off the ocean and it wasn't too much smog there. But that when the Santa Ana winds came and whatnot, and the smog was sitting there, it was so nasty. Or when you went by the foothills, the smog was so thick. And today they say it's the cleanest it's been in 80 years or something like that.
Oh, that's nice.
I guess it's good for LA. What about us here, though, in Northern California? Huh? Anyway, if you're wondering what's going on with the gas prices.
It's the oil prices have still remained relatively low.
It was, what was that new legislation also in California? That this was...
New legislation? California? Are you sure? When's there new legislation in California?
I've always thought, every time they come up with a new law, they got to take away two.
Get two. You got to get rid of two. One new law, got to get rid of two.
That's our new, yeah. We should have a proposition for that.
We'll call it the two-for-one legislature.
Lose two when you get one.
We got a proposition.
That's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's 921-1530. Let's talk to Jane. Jane, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi. Yeah. I'm a pretty regular listener, but I've missed a few weeks, and I don't know if you've covered this.
Shame.
Yeah. I'm ashamed that I did miss them.
We are available on podcast.
You know, I actually do go back sometimes and listen to the podcast.
Thank you. So. Thank you. I appreciate that.
I will admit that.
Well, thank you, by the way, for being a regular listener. We appreciate that. Yes. I think we've got about 8 or 9 regular listeners now.
Actually, after the show, we go and visit them.
Okay.
We drive by each one of their houses. We bring them picnic lunch.
Oh, well, I appreciate
such a small group.
I know. So what can we do for you?
Anyway, I would like your opinion on what people should do to protect their identity and their credit such as LifeLock or Freeze Your Credit or...
I can tell you what we do in our family is we freeze our credit.
Okay.
We freeze our credit and have for years. I have four children. We freeze all the kids' credit because sometimes that's actually where it takes place. This identity theft is...
The theft from, you mean the kids overdrawing on something not supposed to be spending money on?
No. Someone will actually steal their social security number and their identity, and then they open up credit cards. But it's real. I mean, it is absolutely real. This identity theft is absolutely real. LifeLock, I have no experience with LifeLock or any of these other paid services.
Okay.
If I was going to do one, you know, what happens is you see the credit rating agencies get into it now, like Experian. Well, actually, they do this sort of LifeLock thing.
In the last year, I've had three credit cards compromised. I had a work American Express, a home Visa, and a home American Express the last 12 months.
I've had two.
I had me at some nightclub in Delhi on a few thousand rupees. I thought... Man, it sounded like I had a good time in India, and I wasn't even in India one time. Three different credit cards compromised in the last.
Wow.
And they've gotten pretty good about it. I had one compromised. I was purchasing something in a Piggly Wiggly in Alabama.
Here's where I have greater concern. And I'm not that concerned about the credit cards because the banks will indemnify you for that. So it's like, you know, it's just a nuisance. I think where we really need to be careful is our passwords that we have. Our passwords for our bank account, our passwords for when we go into our credit card account, our passwords for our 401k or IRAs, all those passwords. And most of us have these kind of simple passwords because when we started needing passwords 15 years ago or whatever it was, we wanted something that we could remember. And then we all have about 50 passwords, it seems, right? So... I think one thing that's important, maybe you have a basic password for some of those websites you go to that don't have a lot of, you're not doing financial.
The financial ones.
Not financial.
Yeah, that's what we were talking about.
But for the financial ones, you want something that's fairly complicated.
So if you actually go to our website, we have written an article about password protection and how to choose a password. Yeah, but it doesn't hurt you at all to actually freeze your credit. It absolutely, it doesn't stop your credit cards from being compromised, but it essentially stops people from opening credit in your name. And that's what you really worry about, is someone opening credit in your name. Who was telling me recently that a gentleman that works at our company, someone opened a credit in their name and bought a bunch of furniture with it. Actually, in Sacramento, in a furniture store, and they ended up fighting with that particular company to not pay it. But a credit freeze would have stopped that.
Okay.
All righty.
Because I do hear those companies sell these products, so I thought, we've been discussing it. We don't really take out much credit. I mean,
But then it does the same thing, right? What happens is what these companies do is notify you when someone actually hits your credit and to see if they should issue credit to you. Freezing your credit does exactly the same thing, right?
Yeah.
It just basically says, hey, if there's an inquiry about my credit, we're not interested. We don't want any credit. In order to get credit yourself, you have to unfreeze it, apply for the credit, and then you refreeze it afterwards.
Yeah.
And it's easy.
Okay.
It's easy.
Sounds good. Well, thank you.
All right. Well, appreciate you listening.
Also, and if you go into our website, hansonmclain.com, and look under newsletters, on January 20th, it was a particle physicist's guide to smart passwords, our director of IT. I learned a lot from that article as well. So it's right on our hansonmclain.com. Glad you called.
Okay.
Thanks.
Okay.
Have a great weekend, Jane. Glad you're a listener, too. We appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you. You too.
So sometimes you've heard the story that cobbler's kids go barefoot, right? So our director of IT at Hanson McLean does tons of research on password protection, writes a great article on some things you could do to make your password.
And he was a particle physicist.
Lawrence Lim of Livermore Lab. I don't know why that makes him great at passwords, but...
Makes him probably the smartest guy in our room.
Okay. My question to you, Pat,
Have I changed my password?
Yes.
No,
I have not either.
But in saying that, most of my passwords are for things that don't matter. I actually don't check my 401k online. I don't check my IRAs online. I don't.
Well, because you have different access to them. You're in a different situation than most.
That's probably
fair. I don't have to look at my financial stuff from home because I just log right into our office system and can see it from there.
Fair enough.
But I have yet to go and change my own passwords. And it's one of those things that I think about often that maybe it's I need to take my own advice.
I just think of that poor guy that called our show here 6 months ago when he was on vacation. Someone stole his laptop and he had his password saved in his notes somewhere. In his, and they went in and drained his 401k.
That's not good.
Mm-mm. So.
All right, let's talk with John from Lincoln. John, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi.
Hi,
just
John.
Called in to find out if there's a way we can hedge some of our money that we're making so that we're not paying so much taxes. I'm a former school teacher, retired about 12 years ago, continued teaching, substituting, and then took on a job at a private school and making an extra 20 grand approximately a year. We have a TSA. We're drawing in money from my pension, my wife's union, our Social Security, and we did estimate taxes, put in $500 every quarterly, thought we'd break even. Turns out we owe the government about $3,000, and it was a shock to us, kind of. And so I'm just trying to figure out if there's another way we can hedge our money in order to avoid paying so much taxes.
Right at the top of our head, I can think of a couple ways. One is you can funnel all of your new income into a TSA if you're not doing so.
So that's a tax-sheltered annuity for those people out there that aren't teachers?
Do you know specifically that is American Fidelity?
It doesn't matter.
I don't think we can put any more money into it, can we, honey?
Yeah, you can.
Absolutely.
Well, if not that, through your employer, you can contribute, is it 22 or 22, whatever the number is this year, 20-somewhat thousand, because you're over 50, I'm sure. Into a tax shelter. So you can literally direct your employer, take our entire paycheck and have it go to, and you could pick a new tax shelter annuity provider.
Yeah, you don't have to use, you can use anyone.
Have to have a long-term investment. You can say, I just want to have it here for a couple of years. I plan on working part-time for a couple of years. Then when I retire, I want the money available to me. But that can save you a ton of money right now. That's one idea I was thinking. Also, how old are you, John?
I'm 75.
Okay, you sound much younger. I was going to suggest stopping Social Security for a period of time and letting that grow. I thought you were under age 70, but not at 75. That doesn't make any sense.
Wouldn't make any sense for you there. But you most certainly should be.
But 75, this is his last year to do it. No, he can continue while he's still working.
As long as he's working.
Yeah. Oh, all right.
As long as you're working.
So contact your...
You know what, though? You could, by doing that, you might be setting up more problems for yourself down the road, depending on what you have in your other TSAs.
How much money do you have saved in your IRAs and TSAs?
In our TSA, we have approximately $150,000.
Oh, no, you're fine. Yeah. You're fine. Yeah, put the maximum in. How much money do you have in IRAs?
No IRAs.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Put the maximum in.
Yep.
Put the $22,000
in. You might actually want to do a little more planning and figure out where your tax bracket bumps and... Maybe it's not quite the maximum. Maybe it's something a little bit less. But that's your best bet by far, John. It really is.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. I really appreciate your help.
Yeah,
oh, thank
it's
you.
Our pleasure. That's why we are here every weekend and have been for 19 years because we enjoy this sort of thing. Anyway, 921-1530. A couple lines still to join us if you'd like to, like John or Jane or Jeff or those other callers today. And we're taking a quick break. We'll be back in just a few. Stick around. This is Hanson McLean. Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean.
Glad you're here on this Leap Forward weekend. Just to remind everybody that it's a...
Leap Forward. I'm never supposed to go bicycle riding with...
Not exactly a big deal. Is that 1 hour time change?
My brother-in-law and sister-in-law, and then we got into the argument, do we go at 9 or 10? And they say, well, we should do it at 10.
You decided not to.
I just said, no, I'm just going to stay home and watch TV. No, tomorrow, beautiful bike ride, American River Bike Trail, right past Howe Avenue. The bodies are stacked.
Oh, no. That was bad.
That was terrible.
That was.
Yeah, it was. It was terrible. But it's beautiful.
We'll be 10 like you.
There are parts of the bike trail where you should be very careful, though. If you're riding or running on the bike trail, there are
parts of it that
there should
be. I would agree. And particularly,
and Howe Avenue typically isn't one of those parts that you need to be very careful. The further you get closer to Discovery Park,
okay, the rougher it gets. Thank you for letting us know about the parts of the bike trail to watch out for the half a percent of the population of Sacramento that visits the
bike
trail.
I think that it is a gem of Sacramento. Would you not agree?
I spend quite a bit. I love it down there. And as a cyclist, I think there should be an enforcement on the speed limit down there at 50 miles an hour because...
15 or 50?
15 is what the speed limit is, particularly on the weekends because you get these packs of cyclists going through at 23, 25 miles an hour.
And there's lots of families
on
the bike
families,
trail.
Yeah, families, kids just learning how to ride their bike and stuff, and they're flying through. It's dangerous. They should go slower on the weekends. Anyway, enough about that. Now, let's talk about financial stuff.
That's what we are.
Yeah. You can email us questions at moneymatters.com, or you can call us. 916-921-1530. Let's talk with Tony. Tony, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'm a state employee, and I wanted to pay off a service credit purchase. Lump sum is $70,000.
You know what, Tony? That was probably the smartest investment you've made in your entire life.
I elected to do it right before it expired.
Yeah, good. Buying the airtime?
Yeah.
State worker, you could take some of your own money, and PERS will guarantee a very handsome return the rest of your life. Great deal for you.
Yeah, it is. Well, I want to know what's the best way to pay it off, whether to use a 457, a 401k, or just to use cash.
So tell me, how much do you have in your 457?
Well, those have about $350,000 each.
Each? And how are they invested?
Mostly stocks.
And you say each, do you have a 401k and a 457, or are you talking about a spouse?
No, just me. I have one of each.
You've got about $700,000 total.
How old are you, Tony?
49.
Holy smokes, you're a saver.
Well, yeah, I started right when I first could.
And put the maximum in. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And what's your approximate income?
$100,000 a year.
And how much money do you have outside of retirement plans?
About $150,000.
Do you contribute to a Roth IRA?
Yes, I do.
Of course he does. Of course he does. So why would you even ask? And my guess is you're probably an engineer.
That's right.
Okay. Would you come to one of our workshops, Tony, and show people exactly how an average person can save this much money? Not to call you an average person, I meant an average income.
And are you saving, tell me how much it would cost if you were taking it out of your paycheck and paying it the money towards the service time? How much a month are they going to charge you?
It's like $2,100 a month right now.
And you're saving that much money anyway, are you not?
Well, yeah, for sure.
What's the interest rate they're charging you? It's probably higher than he's earning on cash. That's the thing.
Oh, yeah. I think it's like 8% or something.
Here's the hard thing. So if we didn't ask any backup questions, my standard answer, and I think Pat would agree, says if you've got cash outside, take the cash outside because here's a way. It's almost like you can put 70 grand into an IRA. No one gets that option, right? But I look at you. You're 49. You already have $700,000 saved up in your retirement plans. By the time you retire, when you look at your pension income, you're not going to be happy when you're age 70 and a half and you have required minimum distributions out of your retirement accounts. That's just kind of what I'm thinking about this.
Oh, okay.
How much money do you have in cash in the bank?
He's got 150.
Yeah.
And how much did you say it was as a lump sum to pay this off?
$70,000.
I would take the money from the bank.
I don't think I would.
I would. Why would you not?
He's
got 100% equity in his 457
so how about
and 401k.
This? How about you take 70 grand? Is 150 in the bank?
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Here's what I like about this. We'll know the right answer 25 years down the road, right?
He's looking for the right answer now, though.
Okay. So think about this. If you said, I'm going to take $70,000 out of my 401k, that's in stocks, pay off my airtime. Then I'm going to take 70 grand out of the bank and I'm going to buy the most tax efficient equities I can buy. Let's just say the an S&P 500 index or a total stock market index and plan on holding that thing, that will be highly tax efficient. And down the road, when you eventually sell those shares, you'll have capital gain treatment. No, but under current law, there would also be a tax step-up basis upon death.
And what? How old will you be when you retire?
If you had, instead of $700,000, you had $70,000 in your 401k or even a couple hundred, I'd say definitely take the money in the bank.
I actually agree with you, Scott. I agree with you. Because you've got a number of years, you're probably not going to spend any of this money until you're 70 and a half.
You're going to end up
having a couple $3-4 million in your IRAs. You're aggressively invested. I like your idea, Scott.
So I mean, if you can double it every 10 years, it's simple, without even any contributions, that 700 is going to become, let's call it 1.5. Now we're at $3 million by the time you're
Your required minimum distribution will
be 100
plus. So here's what you want to do. You want to take $70,000 from your 401k and pay off that the service time. And then you want to take $70,000 from your money in your savings, and you want to go out and replicate a similar position. And I'd buy a low-cost total market index for $70,000. And I would not touch it. I would let it do what it's going to do. And that way, you have exactly the same equity exposure as you did going into this. But what you've done is you've actually
all you've done is diversified your tax strategies.
And it's easy. I like that idea. That's a good idea, Scott.
Yeah, you know.
Okay. So mainly I shouldn't increase my RMD is what you're saying.
Your RMD is what we're worried about, what's going to happen to you 21 years from now. 21 years from now.
We're looking at long-term planning. How do we have the best, how can you have the most flexibility at retirement time when you're going to eventually start spending these dollars? And by taking money and throwing more money in having a greater taxable pension, which is what that would be doing, right? We just think this makes more sense.
Well, what if I started putting the money into the Roth 401k?
How much are you contributing now to your 401k and 457s?
The max, like $14,500, I guess.
Into both plans?
Yeah.
Of course he is.
So I like that idea as well. What's your taxable income? What's your gross income that you from your work?
Oh, about $100,000.
And are you married? Do you have a spouse that works as well?
I just divorced last year.
Okay.
I would do half of it.
Yeah, half in the
Roth and half not.
Are you going to stay in California when you're retired?
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't know. I keep hearing you guys saying if I'm going to leave, I shouldn't use the Roth.
That's correct. So just keep doing, do this transaction, keep doing what you're doing.
And keep funding, you're putting money into the Roth every year as much as you can, right?
Yes.
And at age 50, you can contribute, the year you turn age 50, you can contribute more.
Yeah.
All right.
And when you get further down the road and say, hey, I think I'm going to stay in the state.
Here's what I do, actually. Age 50, you can contribute another, 5 or 6 grand to your 401k and your 457. I would have all those extra dollars go to the Roth. You're going to have a savings now because you're not going to have to pay for the service credit because you're just paying it off with some cash.
There you go.
Okay. One more thing. So you said they used the 401k to pay off the lump sum balance?
Yeah, 401k or 457, it doesn't matter.
Okay. I've heard you say the 401k, I actually own the money in there now, but the 457, the state still.
Yeah, but it's the state of California. You're not working for, ditch
water. I'd use the 457, though. All
things being equal, I'd use the 457.
I mean, one's 100% guaranteed it's yours. The other's 99.999%.
Yeah, it's the state of California. You're not ditch water company.
Right. Okay. Well, it's just something you've mentioned.
That's correct.
I heard it. So.
Well, thank you for listening. Thank you for being an ardent listener to this show.
Oh, yeah. I learned a lot from you guys.
Oh, good. Thank you.
Thanks, Tony. Glad you called.
I wish my kids would say that just once.
Thanks, Dad. I learned a lot. My kid, two kids, one... If I say it, it's a bad idea. She's always been that way. My son, I remember one day, he's a little kid, and we're riding our bikes up the hill, and he's a little kid, so it's a new experience for him, and I'm giving him some tips on how to pace yourself. We pull into the garage, he says, hey, Dad, thanks for those tips. Those were very helpful. And I about fell over. It's like, who is this kid? You know, you don't get the. Before we go to the break, someone asked to called in and asked to elaborate on the freezing your credit, how you froze your credit. And froze
I
your
actually,
kids.
I you know, as I was saying that, what you do is you marry an accountant. And then you say to your accountant wife, hey, I think we should freeze the credit. And then magically it happens. I don't know how we did it. My wife is an accountant by education and she did it. So that's how you do it. My house.
Okay. You marry an accountant. That's good advice from Pat. That's
I don't actually, I'm pretty sure we did it online.
Because even when you said that, I was kind of, I didn't quite know what you meant by that.
I don't remember how we did it. We did it years ago, and my wife did. I think she went online, and I would Google freezing your credit.
You know, it's funny. I don't actually worry that much about someone stealing my identity.
Well, because they know you. Who would steal your identity?
Oh,
if they stole your identity, they'd probably return it.
I'm just careful of my passwords. I think of all the things in life to worry about, that's not one. Now, I know that when it happens, sometimes it can be a real pain in the, you know. And if you're worried about it, spend a few bucks a month to get one of those companies to alert you when something's going on. Or just go and periodically check your own credit.
And I apologize. I don't know how we froze our credit.
We still have time to take calls.
But I'll give you my wife's cell number.
She'll appreciate that. 916-921-1530. Again, we still have time for a couple calls. 921-1530. This is Hanson McClain's Money Matters. Scott Hanson and Pat McClain back here with you. Hanson McClain's Money Matters on this great weekend. Mm-hmm. You noticed the price of oil lately? I'm sorry, gold. Maybe you probably don't follow that closely because I don't follow that closely either because if you're going to own gold, it should be less than 5%.
Actually, I don't even understand why they announce gold when on a lot of the newscasts when they're announcing the.
You know what? You don't hear as much of the all the talk show hosts touting
the gold.
Yeah.
Since it actually...
You know, I think about this. A lot of them, they would say, this is who I use for my own gold. And this is when gold was $1,900 an ounce.
What are they...
I wonder how it's all worked out for the talk show host. And I've always wondered, why would I take investment advice from someone who's a political talk show host? Whenever I hear those ads, why are they going to be able to dispense decent investment advice? The last person I'd take investment advice.
Or political advice, for that matter.
Well, I might listen to more on the political stuff.
So what's your point? The gold has not done well from its high. It is down.
Yeah, no, and it, last week was down over 2% again. On Friday, I'm sorry, it was down over $1,160 an ounce. It was almost $2,000 an ounce a while back. I mean, it's really taken quite the nosedive. And it's a good thing, you know, I'm bringing it up primarily because, look, when things are hot, we have a tendency as a society to believe they're going to continue to go that way. So we've seen the U.S. stock market have
tremendous run-ups.
And I mean, we would certainly like to see that go up in the future. But if things aren't, they don't go straight up forever. And when things get to the point where people are talking about there's really no risk and all these reasons why it's going to be different this time. We heard that with oil, right?
But Scott, the NASDAQ just hit its 15-year high.
It's 15.
15 years.
It's still not back to where it was.
15 years. Had you bought the Qs...
And here's,
in 1999.
And if you think about this, it's not just let's say you bought all the companies that comprised NASDAQ, companies like Apple. They were part of NASDAQ back then, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who else has done great? Whatever. Mm-hmm. Some companies have surely done good.
Absolutely. Some are no longer in the NASDAQ.
A lot are no longer in the NASDAQ. So you also had a lot of companies, AOL, that I don't know, I haven't tracked the stock, but I can't imagine that's done too well for you over the years. And a number of stock companies that are out of business. So had you bought that collective basket, you would still be, as far as the share price, underwater from where you were in the year
1999.
2000, I think it was March of 2000 we hit the peak, February, March of 2000. But anyway, we finally hit back that.
So when asset prices go up, it doesn't mean they will go up forever. We saw this in real estate. If you are a longtime listener of this show, you will know that 7 years ago,
we were
saying, hey, don't get too excited about this real estate.
It was the underlying fundamentals weren't there.
That's correct.
That was the issue.
But there was a time in 2009 and 10 where we were saying, hey, this in 11, real estate looks pretty attractive. We don't feel that way
so
as now.
Yeah, so aren't we smart on
picks? It wasn't the underlying.
It's not like we're making picks and calls on where the market's
going. No, but the underlying fundamentals said that there's more
sometimes
risk in a market than at other times.
Sometimes
we know
things
that
are screaming at you like, whoa, you know. Anyway, point is, just remember, before you're going to over-allocate, and if we had a call a couple weeks ago where someone said, I'm thinking of moving I have U.S. stocks, foreign stocks, small and mid-cap stocks, and I'm going to get rid of my foreign stocks and move it to the U.S. stocks because the foreign stocks didn't do well last year.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing. The same thing as of buying gold at 2000. Same kind of concept.
Yes.
921-1530. We still have time for a couple calls. 921-1530. We're talking to Sandy in Nevada City. Hi, Sandy.
Hi. My question has to do with saving money for a grandchild to go to college, hopefully. And right now we save money under the Custodian for Minors Act?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. And which I believe then we end up paying taxes on the gain. I've always wondered, no, maybe not. Okay.
No.
The 529 plan for college, what happens if the child chooses not to go to college? Is there a way for us to take the money out without all the penalties, or is it best to stay with the custodian?
So there's two things that will happen. One is if the child does not go to college, there'll be a 10% penalty and taxes will be due. But you can change the beneficiary in the 529 anytime you want. So how many grandchildren do you have?
We don't. We only have the one, and our children, one of which is in college, doesn't need it. So we don't really have another beneficiary.
How old is your grandchild?
12.
12. I would advocate for the 529. It can be used for trade school. And actually, new law just came out. It could be used for room and board as well. So taking care of living expenses. So if you say your grandchild says, I'm not going to college, and you say, well, you got to figure out some skill. Why don't you go to electrician school or figure out some sort of trade? It would pay for that trade school and all their expenses during that time. If they say, I'm not going anywhere, well, you probably don't want them to have the money, I guess.
Then what would happen is with that custodial, they get the money.
Yes.
And you don't want that. You do not want a 19-year-old that decides, you know, hey, I'm going to go live along the Yuba River. I used the Nevada City reference there.
Even though you might keep it hidden from her and not let her even know that you have that?
Seen that. How many times have you seen that, Pat?
We do it. Actually, what we will
People
do
People say, how do we make sure that a kid
We actually hide. We actually open up a little one and let them find that and keep the big money hidden.
So what's the...
You can't, Pat, you can't talk about these little things that aren't necessarily the...
What do you mean? That's what we do?
You can't give that kind of direct advice to somebody.
I said, I don't give that direct advice.
But oftentimes, but the fact is, I think to Pat's point, there are times it's literally disastrous. And I do remember a client, their son went through a very challenging time involved in drugs. They had a lot of money set up inside. I mean, it was 30 or 40 grand. It was a lot for a young man. In a NUTMA account, the kid wasn't going to college, involved in drugs. They were literally terrified he'd find out about this money. They said, if he finds this money, he's going to go on some bender and could kill himself.
Yeah.
And
so what kind of advice did you give him then?
Same kind of thing. We talked about how to hide it, make sure he never finds out about it. Whether that's on the up and up, completely legal, I believe it was the ethically right thing to do in that situation, whether or not it was.
At that point, if that were the course of the child, couldn't we, as custodian, even though they are of age, couldn't we just cash it out and put it back into our money?
No.
Our name?
No. You gave it away.
As soon as it's in the custodial.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, you could and then say, come get me.
Well,
once they're age 18, you could push it. California could push it to age 24.
24. Okay. And so what is the true advantage then of the 529? Is it purely taxes?
Yes.
It is.
Yeah.
Whereas with the custodian, we are with.
So a portion is taxed at zero, and then a portion is taxed at the child's rate. That's the benefit, rather than.
And
the
when they're
rate.
Under age 14,
I would not use. I would not. I have not recommended an UGMA or UTMA since they've started the 529 plan.
Oh, really?
just flat out have not done it. And the reason is we see what happens when kids get money. I mean, firsthand, and it's not good.
Yeah.
I mean, it is because the child that's not going to spend it on college, you know, it's very rare that you get an 18-year-old that is hyper responsible.
They might be, but the fact is, if you have a kid or grandkid that goes through, you know, some years like a lot of young people do, where they're not very responsible and they are self-destructive, and sometimes those things. You don't want them to have that accent.
It's fuel. It's fuel
and I don't
for
know,
the fire.
I mean, I think if you looked at the percentage of the kids that make some poor choices at that age, whatever the percentage you might think it is, 20% or 30%, there's clearly a high percentage of kids make poor choices as young adults. And so our belief is just it's best that they don't have access to money.
And the 529 keeps that.
It's your money.
You control it.
Your money.
And in a worst case scenario, if they just decide not to do anything, any education, we just pay the 10% penalty and call it good.
Yeah. You know, and my guess is that at some point in time, there'll be legislation that allows you to gift it to a charity.
Ah, yeah.
That is my guess.
Okay. So just
keep
it there. Just keep it in the 529.
Yeah, I did the 529.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Appreciate the call.
Bye-bye.
Yeah.
And I remember years ago, I had a client inherited some, grandma died, mom and dad are left, a couple grandkids who were teenagers, 16-year-old boy.
Yeah, $100,000 or something, wasn't it?
I don't remember the numbers. I just remember that I don't remember the exact numbers, but he had the most awesome car at school, some Mustang with some awesome engine in it and all that sort of stuff. And then his allowance was, I don't know, $800 a month or something. For a high school kid living at home, the allowance off this money, I'm thinking, this poor kid.
It's not good for him.
It was not good. I mean, you're 16 years old, and you've got the hottest car at school, and you've got $800 a month cash coming in.
I know what it's like.
What?
I know what it's like.
That's what it was like for you at 16?
My dad actually bought us a mail van, those big boxy square mail vans.
You drove a mail car
yes.
at age 16?
Yes. With a right-hand drive? it was painted like bright yellow.
Well, I'm sure you had a lot of dates for that.
Oh,
hey, how about I pick you up on Friday night?
We had lunch. Lawn chairs?
There's only one seat in this, so
there was actually only there were lawn chairs in the back. But that's it. It would be great.
You were just shaking them off with a stick at that point, weren't you?
Oh yeah.
Was your hair bright red back then, too? There's McLean.
It was bright red. My hair was fiery red.
I was driving the mail truck.
Big, boxy mail truck. Ah, the women were all over me.
I'm surprised you got married at such a young age, Pat, considering the kind of start you had.
I actually married the first girl that smiled at me.
Anyway. Hey, glad you joined us on this Saturday. By the way, go to our website, moneymatters.com. We've did a complete revamp of it. And while you're there, you can get podcasts of this very program. You can sign up so the podcasts get delivered to you each week if you'd like. There's also some great information, including our 7 personal decision points for retirement transition. You can download that ebook there. We greatly appreciate you listening to us. We'll be here next weekend. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.